Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ta-da.
Yes.
Who's
yes.
ready?
I'm ready. Everyone.
Yes. Okay, it's running commentary. We're in Regent's Park. I'm going on the grass. You can run on the grass.
I can't. Get off the grass.
That's obsessive compulsive voice. It's the voice of our guest. It's Natalie Haynes. You can run in the park, but you can't run on the grass.
I think I've laid out my stall quite early.
I noticed just before recording that we talked about running around the park. I said, yeah, it's great because you can run on the grass. And Natalie just got really quiet.
She's like, nothing else.
She's obviously not a grass runner.
Watch this. Watch this.
Off the grass. Rob's running on the grass.
You know what we should do in real life? But let's introduce what's happening first, but I'm going to tell you my plan. But we're in Regent's Park with Natalie Haynes and runner, writer, old friend, compadre.
Classicist.
Very important to note. And particularly with the marathon factor.
Yes.
But let's get to that. And we've just been running and chatting already. You interviewed us for the radio.
Yes, so we're very keen today, aren't we?
It's a double run.
Two birds with one stone.
Yeah. What, over there? Oh, I didn't see it. What are they doing?
It's a recording.
But what I think we should do, Natty, is that sometimes, Paul, when we get to the sports field in Highgate Woods, we take our shoes off and run barefoot across the grass.
On the grass.
It's a very special thing.
So we'll be doing that.
We're going to do that. To start psychologically preparing yourself.
Stop the recording.
No!
Interesting.
Where's she gone?
You'll love this. No, I won't do it.
So you're not a grass runner then? You like the... Talk me through that.
No, I think it just comes from years of being in places where there were signs saying keep off the grass.
Right, okay.
And there's one of the few... I'm normally quite... I don't like an authority figure. So normally a sign will make me intrinsically rebel. I don't know, I just feel guilty, especially when it's been such a dry spring.
I'm like,
grass is all drying out anyway.
Fair enough for the dry spring.
I was just going to say, in literature, the parkie is the ultimate authority figure. But then I think
I'm thinking of a
slightly different kind of literature.
Yeah.
The Moomin Books and Beano, perhaps.
Yeah.
Not so much in, you know, the Aeneid.
Yeah, there's almost no park keeping in the Aeneid at all, I'm afraid. Yeah.
Right, park keeper's been given a gift of a wooden horse.
Well, he'd be delighted. Wait a minute, it turns out to be full of trouble.
What were the two things you were saying? Running barefoot, marathon. Do you, as a classicist, do you often...
Should we define what classicist means for people who don't know what classicist is?
Yeah, yeah. Go on.
What was a classicist?
I did triple classics A-levels, by which I mean Latin, Greek and ancient history.
Brilliant.
For maximum employability.
Yeah, of course.
And then I read classics for my degree.
Brilliant.
I specialised in Greek tragedy and the philosophy of Plato and a bit Aristotle, but only the ethics.
I did a degree in Greek tragedy. And I met a champ on the way to my first day. Due to a conference of events, I killed him. But I thought, it doesn't matter. It should go well. But by the end of the degree, I found out that I'd accidentally married my mum. I'd killed everyone I know and I killed myself.
Thank you.
You helped a lot.
That seemed funnier in my head.
Just
like the idea of...
Through all the classics.
just because tragedy is so. I love that when you see it, even in a, you know, even in a sort of modern action thriller, that sense of the fun thing about tragedy. I don't know if fun's the right word. Is how doomed it is. How it's doomed to fate. You know, the first moment when things go wrong, you think, oh well, there we go. You got these characters rattling around thinking it's going to be fine. And it isn't.
Because they can't escape their fate.
Oedipus Tyrannus is exactly that play. Oedipus the King. That is exactly that play. It is all about free will versus determinism. And whether you have any free will. Or whether the whole thing is preordained. But it's worth bearing in mind. Or at least I think it's worth bearing in mind. That this was the debate they were having in the 5th century BCE.
It's been going.
If you watch Aristophanes' comic play The Frogs. Or indeed read it if you don't get to see a production. The two.
Well, you know, I told someone about The Frogs and they said, read it.
Nice. There's two dead playwrights in it, Aeschylus and Euripides, and they're having that exact debate. Was Oedipus always the unluckiest man to ever live, or did he become it as he went along? So it's a puzzle that we've been looking at for 2.5 millennia.
The essential puzzle of life.
Maybe.
Which you can't look at. We were talking about this on your interview just now about how, you know, a marathon is a good example of that because you totally bring it on yourself and you think, well, this will be fine, and it is and it isn't all at once, you know.
But then you have chosen that, haven't you?
Yes, that's right.
It's not predetermined, is it?
No, that's true.
So we've just sorted it.
Okay, thank you. Good. I'll just call neuroscience and tell them it's fixed.
Yeah. Oh, would their argument be that we're predetermined to want to,
that's exactly
to have an
what
experience?
Their argument would be. Yeah.
You know, just going back to what you said.
It's just the nature of the experience would differ.
Right.
You're not necessarily predetermined to want to run a marathon, but an experience like that.
You were going
to
do something. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, real determinists would say you were always going to run, say, the London Marathon in 2017, sub-3.
Okay. Because.
Which means you shouldn't have bothered.
Because it was in your nature.
But how do they know that?
So I suppose the argument would be that whether or not we know it doesn't change its irreducible truth.
It's a lot like the story of
a bit retrospective.
Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Yeah.
It's almost exactly like Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. I really like that film.
It's a great film. Yeah. And but the, you know, where the twists and turns of the story were all predicted by the baddie, and he says, I knew you'd do it all along. And Tom Cruise says, yes, so did I.
I think there's an element where you can retroactively change the future, if that doesn't sound like an entirely incoherent sentence. Because, for example, my lovely producer on Radio 4 Extra, Mo McGowan, ran the London Marathon this year.
Yeah.
She was very nervous about doing it because it was her first one, even though she's a brilliant runner, and I always knew she'd be fine. And I went in to record a set of programmes in advance with her, which I present on Radio 4 Extra.
Yeah.
And on those, I had written a link for the night of the marathon, saying that our chief executive technician, i.e. Moya, our producer in real life, had just had a very difficult day running 26.2 miles. So she could help you with things, but she couldn't go down any stairs.
Right.
And when we recorded it, of course it hadn't yet happened. And she was like, oh, what if I can't make it round? Like, but you've already made it round.
Yes.
Because it's in the seventh dimension. That's what's going to happen. And I like to think a tiny bit of her at mile 23 when she was very tired.
Helped her. The seventh dimension.
But I've already done it. And since the seventh dimension is all time travel and sci-fi, it seemed appropriately confusing.
I suppose that's linked with... I mean, you visualise things, don't you? You visualise events. I mean, you visualise... I do a little bit of visualising for the... for the marathon, how I'm going to feel at certain stages. I suppose you're in some way transporting a thought across to a feeling that you anticipate.
In truism, we're talking about defining your reality or choosing, you know, making your own luck, this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's definitely some truth in it. You've got to hang on to the rudder of your own life. But equally,
random things happen.
Determinism, and also, you know, it's kind of slightly self-defeating to be determinist enough to say everything's going to happen, so none of it really matters, you know.
Well, that's always how I feel about determinism. I would never make a good stoic on those terms.
Because it's a bit sort of
but
despairing.
But you're very relaxed
about
it.
You have no say in your life. You just become an organic robot.
Yeah.
I don't wish to live like that.
Which you're obviously not.
No, exactly. And when you look at it, it's a whole lot of bears all over the place.
Is that determinism?
Oh, I see. He's taking it off.
Mind if we...
Don't know. We find out what bears do in the woods.
What a great moment.
That man's very much dressed as a bear.
He really was dressed as a bear.
Yeah. So
there's got to be a backstory there, hasn't there?
Yeah, well, I hope so.
What is he acting out?
Because I saw him waving to and greeting some children. I'm hoping that it isn't just a
guy in the way to make friends in a bear costume.
Unless he's escaped from the zoo.
Yeah. Where there aren't any bears, I should just say.
No.
Don't worry, it's all fine.
Yeah.
Or at least there aren't any bears
now. There's now. It was, yeah. There was one.
So when did you start running that?
About 3 years ago.
Right. And was
a very new
I was just going to say, in terms of determinism, that both you and I, when we first knew each other, if you said to us,
we were not
one
runners.
Day you'll be really into the running, we'd have gone, ha ha ha, that's ridiculous.
And then had another gin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did that begin?
I wanted to be better at one thing in my 40s than I was in my 30s. And I thought something that you could count would be an easier thing to do. So that was part of it. And also in 2013, is that true? I think it was 13. I judged the Booker Prize.
Right.
And Rob will remember seeing me during this period when I read 151 novels in 204 days. But I thought I was probably going to lose my mind.
So full of stories.
Yeah, but also so tired.
Yes.
It's like, you know, people go, oh, I love reading, what a dream job. It was a dream job. And the first 100 days where you read 50 books was joyous. And the second 100 days where you read 100 books was less joyous.
Yeah, yeah. Literary wall.
It's like being a runner and running a marathon, really. You're kind of using your
totally
favourite thing
is.
As a stick to beat yourself with.
It's the only thing that prepared me for running my first half. Was that sense which the Booker had given me that when you get to halfway, you won't feel better. And no point when you go, hey, I'm halfway through. It's all fine from now. Yeah. I'm halfway through. And all the pain of the half I've done is crashing down upon me.
Yeah.
So there were similar experiences in some ways, but mainly, I think, just doing that much work. I was getting up at 5, reading half a novel before other people woke up.
Wow,
then, you know, writing
that's
a column
intense.
Or editing my own book or something in the morning. And then it gets lunchtime and I go, right, I need a power nap of 20 minutes, that's fine. And then I would read another book in the afternoon.
No physical outlet.
Not enough.
Such, yes.
Certainly. Yeah. And so I was just incredibly anxious.
This is a difficult one, because running
by
then
my
would have helped
quite anxious.
At the time, but you wouldn't have had time.
I guess I would have made time, but at the time I couldn't run. And also, I say that, I would have made time. Like, time is my bitch. Time is not my bitch. Sometimes
no.
there just isn't
just
any more
time,
of it.
Yeah.
There just aren't enough hours in the day.
Right. So
I'm just standing here and do cliches every few minutes.
It was quite a profound intellectual experience. But it was also quite a profound emotional experience to go through such a long endurance event. And then at the end of it, I just thought, I'm so tightly wound. I actually have to find a way of putting this out somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so running was... I already walked, you know, lots of miles a week. And I still do. So
walking's great, isn't it?
I think you said something interesting earlier on that as a writer, you find walking is more valuable than running because you've got a clearer level ahead. And running is more... absolutely more meditative, really. It's just a complete intellectual clear out.
Running resolves my anxiety issues in a way that walking doesn't. I can be stressed at the start of a walk and I'm mostly fine by the end of it,
yeah.
But not always. And sometimes I can be stressed for a whole walk and that is of course horrible. But if I'm stuck at a bit in a book that I don't know how to fix, then a walk is much more likely to fix that for me than a run.
Yeah.
Okay.
On the other hand, the act of running, even if the 40 minutes, 50 minutes or whatever of the run itself doesn't seem particularly like it gives me good ideas.
Yeah.
Camel's my
out.
Head is.
It cleans you out, doesn't it? It kind of
just
it's a bit clear out. Yeah.
It's properly.
It's a reboot,
a blank
slate
moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really need those. Otherwise, I just the anxiety just really piles up for me, and I start getting stressed about things I can't control, which is.
So it's really.
A waste
it sounds like. I mean, it's for all of us, but it sounds quite medicinal.
It is.
I see it as medicine.
Yeah.
I see a run as medicine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. What I find amazing about it as a. It's definitely psychologically helpful. I mean, you know, we've talked about this, what it's proven to be, you know what I mean? It is a prescription a doctor can give to someone who's, you know, got certain conditions and it will make them better.
Yes.
And as you were saying earlier on, it's addictive. It's very hard to get madly into running or train up for something, like for some external reason, like because you're running a marathon for charity or something, and then to stop, I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet... as something that's an addictive medicine, the great thing is it's very short on downsides.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's bad for your knees and it takes time out of your day. That's about it.
But less time than other.
Less
time than other acts, like, you know, going for a swim or whatever. I mean, because at least when you're running, you're just running out. Your 20-minute run's a 20-minute run.
Yeah.
It's time.
And I do the same loop. I'm such a creature of habit. That loop doesn't really come close. I run the exact same route. And
if I just like to flag up these details.
I do more loops.
Won't run on the grass. Liked it because there was counting.
Yeah,
always
I do like
the same
the
loop.
Yeah.
So how long's your... You built up to this loop. When you started running, did you do the couch to 5K?
I did do the couch to 5K. And
brilliant.
I know everyone already knows it, but I still... Give it a huge shout out for being
it just seems amazing
thing.
And also it doesn't get old, you know, but there's new people starting it right now.
Yeah, it's
and
wonderful.
It works a treat.
It's a proper life-changing thing for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could walk thousands of miles a year, but I couldn't run at all really, and by the end of it I could run, but I still have what you have, though I deserve it more because I've run less far and have been doing it for less long. I still do that thing of looking in the mirror
surprise.
As I leave, going, hmm?
Yeah, but the great thing is, I think, depending on when
that's
you start,
fantastic, isn't it?
How old you are when you start, it doesn't go, you know what I mean? Neither of you would ever be surprised that I run, but I still am.
Yeah.
And, that's the gift of giving it to yourself later on.
So what's your daily loop now then, Natalie, when you go for a run? How long
it's
is
five
it?
5 miles.
Right, okay.
It's 5 miles, so I go through St John's Wood, into Regent's Park, round in a big loop of the park, up Primrose Hill, and then back through St John's Wood to home.
And how often do you do that, would you say?
I do that 4 times a week, I guess.
That's one of those
runs a week I'll make 10 miles, so I'll do extra loops.
Okay, that's...
And were you always training towards a half marathon, or did that come later?
No, I started out wanting to be able to run 5K and thinking that might never happen. And then, 9 weeks later, turns out you do run 5K.
Yeah.
And then... My partner Dan and I did that for a bit, and then I guess because I'm always running in the park.
And you were saying about him that you run together, but you don't run together.
No, he has headphones and he likes music to run, whereas I like to hear the park.
Yeah. When I wear my headphones, Paul finds recording the podcast much more difficult.
Pretty tricky. It's just shouting, Rob.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So yeah, I signed up to do a 10K to raise money for the London Zoo.
Yeah.
Because they were building a new lion enclosure.
I don't believe you.
Nice. I thought, I don't really want the lions to get out. I'd like them to have a good enclosure.
Yeah.
I'm not that fast. Do you know what I mean? I'll go for that. So I raised money for that. And then having done a 10K, my friend Christian, who's a very good runner, unhelpfully said, oh, if you can run a 10K, you can do a half marathon. You can do it in under 2 hours. And that, of course, was the whole thing ruined.
Yes. And how many half marathons have you done now? See, you get a taste.
I have done...
Do you want to take your shoes
three.
Off, by the way? Would you
no,
do that?
I'm good now. I've done
this
three
would be great.
Hours.
See this grass here?
Look how dry it
just
is.
Just imagine it between your toes.
You've got to be nice to the grass.
That would be great.
Poor grass. Yeah, and it's such a difficult spring.
Consistent keeping these on. So, yeah, sorry, half marathons.
You've done three.
I've done three, and I'm going to do one in 10 days.
Oh,
so,
fantastic.
Which may or may not be well advised, given that I will have stepped off the plane in Sydney 22 hours earlier.
That'll be interesting, won't it?
Well, I mean, if it's terrible, I don't have
it'll
to do it, right? If the weather is terrible and I think I'm going to get ill, I've got 9 events to do in 12 days, so
right.
That would be dumb.
Yes. Yeah.
Or if I genuinely feel horrific from the flight, then I don't have to do it.
It's an option there.
It's there, right there.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, they only close the roads in Sydney once a year, I think, or maybe twice.
It'd be great to do a half marathon around Sydney. Yeah.
And also...
When else will I ever get to, huh?
And as a half marathon runner, you are the kind of person, like you say, you often run 10 miles. You generally run half marathon before you're training for half marathon. So it's not going to be... Your body's not going to go, what the hell's happening now?
No, that's true. And I ran the Royal Parks half marathon last year on 1 hour of sleep, so I figure I have trained for this.
You're obviously fond of sort of the extreme edge of race preparation. 1 hour sleep, jet lag.
Just all goes wrong. Yeah.
Just read a dozen books. Yeah. A couple of times recently, and this touched my heart as a film fan, a couple of times people said, if you could only watch one film over and over again for the rest of your life, which film would it be? I said, I'm not going to take part in that because... You know, you'd still get sick of it.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah, even in the line of fire, after a week I'd be done.
Nice.
It's obviously Groundhog Day, isn't it?
Yeah, my partner would watch Jaws happily every week.
It's obviously Groundhog Day, isn't it?
Do you find that, because you're obviously working in the creative industries with all the ups and downs that entails.
Yes, quite.
Do you find that there's a...
It's obviously Groundhog Day, isn't it?
A pleasing... So that would be Groundhog Day. It's obviously Groundhog Day. Would you find it... We found a pleasing correlation with running between effort and reward. So you run a bit,
you feel better.
You feel better. You get a certain distance. You run more. You work harder. You get a certain distance. It's quite a simple relationship, but
yes,
you put a
very
pitch
unlike
in.
A creative.
Yeah, because you put a pitch in for a book. It doesn't matter how hard you've worked on that book. You've worked
really
hard.
You might
never
get anywhere.
You might have, but it might not. You're more at the whim of chance, fashion, politics, whatever. And that's something that's very grounding about running, isn't it?
It's
I really like that.
It's so reassuring to me. And also, I love hearing someone else say it, because that's exactly how I feel. Annoy isn't quite the right word, but I find it tiresome, let's say, to put in a ton of effort. You know, 10,000 word pitch or something.
Yes.
And then they don't buy it. You think, oh, I did all that work for nothing.
Yeah, and it's
and
the nature.
And then equally annoying, all right, not equally annoying, but differently annoying, is when you don't do anything. And somebody says, oh, hi, we just thought you'd be great for this job.
Yeah, I didn't earn that. Yeah.
So
that is life, isn't it? That is, you have to, in life, you have to put those together, even though it's not nearly, as you say, as logical and satisfying as a run, or indeed making an audience in front of you laugh.
Right. But I'm happy with the overall thing.
Yeah, that's the karma of it.
The numbers add up in the end.
I do
like having one bit of my life where
you
the thing
you
I
get.
Do is the thing I get.
Yes, that's right.
That is a nice thing.
I used to cast for adverts a lot, and then I got one. And the one I got, they just phoned up and said, come and do this advert.
Yeah.
And pay me a load of money for that. And all the ones I cast for were horrific experiences that led to nothing. So in my brain, I just sellotape those experiences together and say, well, I cast for adverts and then I got one. In fact, I didn't get the one I was casting for. It's something we're just going to have to ignore. It's something we're just going to have to ignore.
Yes, quite.
I'm a groundhog guy.
He's off again.
But no, we like that. We like
but
that.
It's interesting.
You work hard, you get your reward.
And the audience
just,
thing
I know
is
there are still freak things that can happen. Like you get injured, or the weather could be terrible, or you get an hour of sleep, or whatever. But generally, what you put in
is
what you get out in running.
Yeah.
And that's not true of other bits of my life with anything like the same regularity.
No, and you know this, even aside from running, as someone who used to do stand-up, and now you do stand-up again, but in a specific sort of classical context, but you also write books, is creatively you've done reward and no reward in the moment. Do you know what I mean? When you're in front of an audience, if it's funny, everyone laughs.
Yes.
Whereas when you finish a top-notch paragraph in one of these
no
here books...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah. It's the special duck with park. Oh, I love the special ducks.
What special? What were the
special
what?
Ducks? No, it's all the special ducks. All the fancy ducks live here.
Oh, nice.
You know, come and take pictures of all the fancy ducks.
The special ducks. Every run, the special ducks.
And one of the ducks comes out. If it comes out and shakes his head, 40 more days of winter. See what I did?
I do.
That'd be Groundhog Day.
See? Special duck.
All right, special
look,
ducks.
Fancy.
Special
oh,
ducks.
Oh, yeah, what's that
see?
One? It's one of them.
They're fancy ducks.
Yeah, but it's noisy because I need to be able to name them.
There's a board up. We can go and look.
No, that's not the same. The I need to be able to name them. Might They're coming up against our compulsions quite hard during this run. There we go.
Fancy duck, that's fancy all I'm ducks. Saying.
So I suppose the inevitable question is, when are you going to run a marathon then? When, do you want us to get you into one or pull a few strings?
It's so hard though. It looks so hard. I saw Rob the day after his last marathon. And he could, yeah, I can't remember what you dropped that you could bend down and pick up. I was extremely impressed. But I have no idea.
They're not that hard.
They look
they're
hard.
But they're not. Yeah. They're training. You're already doing about 25 miles a week.
Yes.
You'd only have to extend your long run by a couple of miles a week for
exactly.
like 6 weeks and you'd be
my
away.
My best marathon, my longest training run was 16 miles.
Wow. I could do 16 miles.
Well, if you do, you could, you know.
Just oh, do two one. Magpies. You love magpies.
Yeah, there's two for joy. That's right. We're feeling so hopeful about you signing up for a marathon. Yeah, you
must
should
be
do.
Curious. You must be curious.
I am curious. Yeah, no, I am curious. And I don't hate the idea, but God, it just seems like it would eat so much of my life.
There he is again.
He's running on grass. I don't know what to do.
Killing the grass. It's only a short... I know what you're saying about it, over you know, taking all your energy and mental and physical energy, but it doesn't have to.
I couldn't have done it this year because my book was out at the start of May and my radio series is recording
right
now.
Tell us about your book.
Oh, it's a novel. A working of the Oedipus story, in fact, but not as good as Rob's.
I was on the way to my first lecture.
Oh, God, that was terrible.
And it's called The Children of Jocasta.
Okay.
So it's the story of Oedipus from the perspectives of the women.
Aye.
Yes, quite.
Like it.
So it's a bit... It's a lot sadder than I am.
Right.
But the tour that goes with it, the talk that goes with it is fun because I find it very hard in front of an audience to give up being a bit funny.
Your comedic instincts.
I can't do it. I just can't.
But also, I don't want to make light of your ability to get laughs, but don't you find as someone who's, you know, gone up in a comedy club in front of people who sometimes, you know, actively want to not like you and make them laugh, to stand up in front of people who... just there to hear you talk.
Yes, it's
then
such a nice
turning
gig.
Around and making them laugh is a gift.
Tell
us about it, because that's something I've
it's
never
so
had.
Nice.
Is it really nice?
It's so nice. And it makes me genuinely feel guilty that people describe what I do now as stand-up, because I know it isn't. It's like it looks like it, because I'm in front of an audience with a microphone and I'm talking without a script, and it's all lovely and improvised and delightful. But it so isn't.
Well, it's so different to club stand-up, isn't it?
That's so yes. much easier. Yeah. You know, they've come
but
to see me.
That's a win
they
for everyone. That
informed.
Makes it nice for you, yes. but they're into it and they're enjoying it. You're giving them a good time, you know. It's everybody wins.
But I feel terrible guilt about it. Just so you know, I know that what I'm doing is not as hard as what you guys are doing every week.
Don't feel guilty.
And I remember.
Don't feel guilty.
I've not forgotten.
My only reference to that is my wedding speech. God, that went well.
Yeah,
it wasn't even supposed to be funny. And I was like, whoa, I didn't know this was going to happen. We're just not
you
used to friendly
really
audiences.
You didn't think we'd all laugh?
No.
Okay. We had laughed at your wife's excellent speech.
Yeah, so. Well, that was funny too, but I knew that'd be funny because, you know, it wasn't me.
Which way do you want to go?
So
which way do you go home from here?
I don't know where
we
are.
I've driven here, so I'm fine.
I wasn't paying attention.
So I go out the north corner, so if you want to go for a bit longer, that's the way I have to go.
Head for the north corner.
Should we go to the north corner and then just jog back and I'll give you a lift, Rob?
Is your
I'm
car parked
me where we were, where we met.
Good.
We can go back that way if you'd rather. It's up to you.
It's up to you.
Let's go.
It's up to you.
Let's go.
It's up to you.
Everyone's being too polite.
Natalie, it's up to you. We'll go your way and then we'll go.
You can go your own way. No, the principle is we're running with you. This is trying to come to you about you, so we do your run.
Thanks.
That will lead to more of your truth. Tell us some more of your truth. So, I just wanted to go back to when you did stand-up.
Yes.
Do you look back at that time now and think... How
do you... Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I can't believe I was so brave. Yeah, I was just thinking, how did I do all of that? Must have been out of my mind. Yeah, for 12 years.
But because your job's changed and you've taken up, for me, like taking up running and sort of that sort of physical change in my life is like a year dot. And everything before it is like a sort of seen through a veil. And I the other day, I found a sheaf of old song lyrics and reviews and stuff from when I used to direct plays. And I just thought, well, this comedy thing really went off, you know, because it was years ago. It seemed just irrelevant to me now. And do you feel the same way, or does that just seem like a...
No, I sort of feel like all those people, but kind of... You know that bit at the end of Highlander, where he's trying to explain that he can see everything?
Yes.
Hear everything. I feel like that about my past lives and selves and jobs, I suppose. I think I couldn't be doing exactly what it is I'm doing now if I hadn't been a stand-up.
Without it, yes.
I couldn't have been doing the kind of the non-fiction side of my work if I hadn't written for newspapers, even if I wrote an op-ed rather than being a proper journalist. I couldn't be doing any of what I do if I hadn't got my degree in classics, which at the time seemed like quite a quirky thing to do.
Well, I was going to say, you just said to us, yeah. I was unemployable cubed, but you're impressively employed.
Yes.
It's all fed into each other. It's my really dad, organic,
I really believe that.
That's great. Well, same with my dad. You know, he did classics at university and worked in sales administration for a computer company. So it's a real nice kind of through line.
It has a huge employability. I joke about my trouble classics A-levels, but it's true that classicists are incredibly employable within 6 months of graduating. I should just say, if anyone's thinking of doing classics,
right,
you have an excellent chance of being gainfully employed. I think because employers like the idea of somebody who learns something difficult for its own sake.
Good eye.
I nearly fell on you then. I don't know how that happened. Sorry. No, it's interesting, isn't it, going right back around to determinism, because we kind of become this tapestry of everything we've done. Years ago, I was driving past a clothes shop on the Goldhawk Road on the way to a gig, and I said, oh my God, I got some really embarrassing clothes in that shop once. And Steve Williams said, don't diss it, because it's all part of the rich tapestry that is Rob Deering.
Absolutely.
And I realised that you can't regret anything you did, because it all led to here.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's okay to regret the odd thing that you did, but I don't think you can regret who you were.
No.
I was a lot meaner when we met, I think, than I am now. I'm pretty fucking adorable now.
Yeah. But apart from the swearing.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Steve. I'm never going to break America.
It's kind of regretting maybe the odd moments, but not the pattern of it all.
Right.
There's things that you did that you think could have maybe done without that, but the general arc of it.
It feels like the direction wasn't bad.
Yeah, and if you don't regret anything, then it's true that then you have no sense of shame or embarrassment.
Yeah, you might
what
just
would we be then?
Path.
We wouldn't be British and we wouldn't be over 30.
Yeah. No, quite.
I think shame is underrated.
Yeah.
No, pop stars aren't as good now, they're just confident and happy. It's better when they looked embarrassed about it. Like, you know, it's Top of the Pops 83, the look of shame in their eyes is just fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder whether the marathon's part of that, of getting to that stage where you get sort of, you're sort of laying yourself bare, aren't you? You see people in the last 6 miles in all kinds of states, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Cramping and, you know, being sick and crying and, yeah, do you know what I mean? On the floor.
Well, if one, you know, if one like little run is a meditative freshener, then a marathon is like slowing off a whole skin. You know, it's you put the pre-marathon self behind and move on. You know,
it is like that. It's like it is like a kind of new self post-marathon.
You really got to do a marathon.
Not that we're putting too much on it.
No, but
you're literally denying the possibility of a new self.
Yeah, I know. It seems like a really good thing.
Dennis Hopper says to Keanu Reeves in Speed about the bomb. I said, diffusing the bomb. You're preventing the bomb from becoming.
Yes.
And that's what you're doing, really. You've done half the training.
But can you do some linky, classic linky with the marathon
and
turn it into some kind of runny, booky marathon thing?
Yeah, I suppose so, maybe. I think people have written books on it before.
Let's get straight on this. The original marathon was after the Battle of... It's the same thing as 300, isn't it? It was all Sparta, wasn't it?
Well, sort of.
Around the same time?
Maybe.
Okay.
I think the earliest version we have is in Lucian, which has all the details and that people think of now, and that's 600 years later.
Right.
Will be. But somebody called Philippides, or maybe Phidippides.
Yes.
Runs at a distance. He was a...
He's the one who's known for it, isn't he?
Yeah. Heronome, I think is the word, a day runner.
Yeah.
And he runs from Athens to Sparta, which is much further than 26 miles.
Yes.
About 250 kilometres.
And dies when he gets there.
I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Ah.
I think he takes the message to Sparta and then I think he runs back to Athens.
He's just really
And
puffed.
Then I think he might die.
Right.
But famously he says, Nicomen, we have won. Yeah. That's the message he takes back. I think there's two stories. The running to Sparta to get help and the running from Marathon back to Athens to say that the victory has occurred. And I think they've got mushed together.
And did he use gels?
Yes. Yeah.
Did they have... Because they've got an ultra... They've got a Sparta Ultra, haven't they?
Yeah, the Spartathlon.
Spartathlon, they call it.
Spartathlon.
Oh, they call it Spartathlon.
They do.
I want them to call it the Spultra.
I missed an opportunity, haven't I?
Are you parked on the outside of the park?
No, but I'm parked near where we met, so I don't know where that is.
Oh, that's back. That way is probably quicker.
Okay, all right, okay. Well, what do we think?
Have we finished?
It's up to you.
Well,
I'll go around this bit of park and then get to the bridge to go over to St John's Wood.
We're going
to
run with you to the bridge just so we can finish this conversation.
Okay. Well, then you could just go around the outside of the park going away.
Yeah, we'll just do that,
yeah. So sorry you have to go so slowly with me.
Let's get back to
this. This is perfect pace.
This is really good.
Perfect pace.
Yeah, yeah.
I love running slowly.
Have not thought about pace at any point. So let's get back to the Spultra.
Yeah.
Now, as we got to the, popped out of the park there, we're by that, running commentary listeners, we know we're by this odd track.
The mini running track.
Yeah, slightly shorter than 400 yards, according to Kate Carter.
Yeah.
400 metres, I was getting.
But if you look at it next to another running track, it's definitely skinnier, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
It's got less at either end. I think it might be the same length, but it's skinny.
When we first got there was a grungy bloke in a, he was actually topless, but wearing a woolly hat.
So frequently
which
the case.
Betrays a,
look at this guy.
Look at that guy. Ooh, he's going for
it. Legging it.
He's sprinting. He wouldn't like the speed we're going.
No, he wouldn't. I'm shamefaced before him.
He's doing his, what do you call it, where you run fast and run slow and it's good for you, is that?
Intervals,
thank you.
Yeah.
But and I'm sure it works, those. But equally it misses
so
what running
awful.
Is for. For me.
Yeah, it's so awful.
So, this Spartathlon, I was thinking about how, what kind of fitness there was in kind of ancient Greece, because it's always interesting to think how people think, oh, I'm really training, I train for this run, doing, you know, basically how we consider running an exercise in the 21st century. And then all of it is very kind of first worldly and luxury. And also in some ways, we're just not that fit compared to working stiffs from days of yore.
Well, the thing is that in Athens, in 5th century Athens, which is when the original marathon, if it ever did, would have been run, during the Persian Wars is the first half of the 5th century. And then the great kind of flowering of Athens' cultural life is the second half. So that's when that's when Socrates is talking to his underlings. That's when Socrates...
For watchers of Bill and Ted, that's Socrates, right?
Socrates, right. When Euripides, Aeschylus, Sophocles are all writing their plays and so on. Aristophanes is inventing comedy.
Knock, knock.
Quite. And so, at that time, it seems really mad to us, but the act of being fit was a civic duty for men.
Right.
Because you would have to fight to defend the city. The latter part of the 5th century, Athens is at war with Sparta for 30 years.
And they were tough, those guys.
They were tough.
They were really tough.
They didn't have much furniture. But the Spartans were very good on land.
Sparta.
Until 371, where they finally lost to the Thebans.
So everyone was fit, just now they'd go down there.
But you had
to be ready.
You had a duty. You had to go and exercise naked, by the way. I don't get to. I have to live in a cloistered house and never see anyone. Okay. But you have to go and exercise naked. Yeah. And you would, here's fun, have used olive oil
and a scraper.
And red dust as a sunblock so you didn't get burned. Isn't
that
great?
At the end, you have the,
they had sunblock in the
Julia teaches people about this at the British Museum. And they've got her. She's got the... she's showing kids and saying, what is this? And they never get it. I can't remember what it's called. But it's the scraper for taking the dust. Striddle.
Yeah, striggle. Yeah, they're Roman, but yes, the exact same thing.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, you know. But then, and you look at statues and everything, you know that the cover images from men's fitness are, you know, this is what you should... What's happening here? Flying trapeze school.
I made a documentary about Greek statuary for BBC Four a couple of years ago. And the sort of performance of nudity for men in the ancient world. And when women are shown, always goddesses, of course, they're naked except for a piece of gossamer thin fabric. And it's much saucier than the men who are performing.
Totally naked, yes.
Yeah, but that's
who wants to see that?
That's why all the Greek statues have tiny penises. It's because they're supposed to be unsexualized.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're supposed to be thinking of the muscles and the civicness of it and not thinking of whether or not you'd like to kiss them on the mouth.
You would actually do all right with a... You know, we know that it was kind of 30s Hollywood that brought the loincloth into the thing. But get a loincloth, you know. You can tidy things up down there. It's somewhere to tuck your... I don't know, if you've got a message, you could have it written down.
I guess you just didn't think about it. But, yeah, no, I don't know, really. And also all that naked wrestling. I mean, it's... I always think it's quite homoerotic in rugby and things. And it's like,
I don't know what you're talking about. It's the first time I've considered this.
Yeah. but no, naked wrestling, it's like, well, that is, and that's not even a euphemism for sex, is it? That's just the same as sex.
That is a sexual act, that's right. Well, actually, we're going to go back now into Regent's Park and take off our clothes and roll around in the sun.
Aww.
But just for exercise.
That's what we normally do.
That's the end.
So you do the barefoot running and then the rolling around naked.
Then the rolling around, yeah.
Cover ourselves. Actually, if we take our shoes off once we've seen our feet, you can't think about anything being attractive for the next 8 to 10 weeks.
That's on a Greek statue. Destroy them.
They have lovely toes, don't they, Greek statues? They have beautiful long toes.
They're lovely all over.
Seen as a sign of rationalism, I think.
What, having long, clever toes?
Yeah.
I've got Morton's toe, where the second toe's
longer than the first.
I was told that was a sign of enlightenment.
Mm-hmm. I've got Sounds Morton Harkett's toe, so which has got leather bound around it and sings in a really high voice.
So do you get blackened index toes, as it were?
A little bit.
I do too.
A little bit, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't ever work out if it's because my second toe is longer or it's because I claw it as I run.
I think that nails are important. Keep your toenails really short because when over a long run, this light waggling of the nail leads to bleeding underneath.
Nice bit of intense nail advice at the end of the podcast.
After the homoeroticism.
Yeah.
Thank you, Natalie Haynes.
Look forward to seeing you at the next marathon. That'd be great.
Where can our listeners find you online?
Nowhere, really.
Nowhere. Keep your head down.
Yeah,
they can find you on the radio. And in all good bookshops.
And all good bookshops, yes, of course.
Jocasta's.
The Children of Jocasta.
Children of Jocasta. I knew that.
There is a running scene in it. Oh, I forgot. There is an ancient running scene
well,
in it.
Well, that's okay. We haven't stopped yet. There's an ancient running scene in it,
which I wrote. It's quite early on. It's about. Yeah, it must be in the first 100 pages, definitely. But there is an extremely exciting, I hope, race in which skullduggery occurs.
Fantastic.
Ooh, yeah. And it was a lot of fun to write. I used all my running wisdom for it. So you have to
see
if it works.
Well, you get more running wisdom when you do that marathon.
It's been a pleasure running with you today. It's been really
Thanks
nice,
for
actually.
Me.
This on your regular run. And get in touch with us on Facebook, Twitter, RunComPod, isn't it?
Instagram.
We're all over it with our pictures and photos.
I'm going to have to go back to the world of work because people keep trying to phone me. And look how sunny it is on us.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Boom, 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 boom